Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times bestselling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida, each and every Thursday at floridaphoenix.com. Floridaphoenix.com. Craig has his weekly column, and this week, Craig, I was so happy you picked up this topic. It's something I'd, you know, been picking up on the periphery and trying to follow on social media and here and there. But we head down to Captiva Island, one of the states, you know, a beautiful state, undeniably one of the most beautiful parts of a beautiful state. And lo and behold, here's a real shocker, a developer trying to get away with something.
Well, it's just it intrigued me. I saw an op-ed written by James East, one of the people I quoted in the column, who was writing about this. And I was like, holy cow, that's incredible that they're trying to pull this off. There's a big resort there, the South Seas Resort, where they had terrible damage from Hurricane Ian. And it's to the point where 9 months later, they're still closed. They're still trying to renovate and restore stuff. And they've tried to sneak this thing through the county commission to allow them to build higher and build with greater density in this area that got smashed by a hurricane. So it's like, hey, you know, we didn't learn anything from the hurricane.
No.
We want to put more people at risk.
Yeah.
And they're doing this in June thinking that, oh, all the snowbirds are gone. It'll be quiet. We can sneak this through. They were hammered by everybody in the community. I mean, every group you could think of, from the Chamber of Commerce, the Conservation Association, came down on them like a ton of bricks and said, stop. We disagree with this. We don't want to see this.
Once the word got out, there was an avalanche because the developer had very carefully attempted to make this as hush-hush as possible. And they had a lot of help from the city council to do that, didn't they, Craig?
County Commission. Yeah.
County Commission.
And,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the Lee County Commission loves developers. They have overdeveloped. They've allowed the overdevelopment of the barrier islands to the point where, as of last year, the evacuation time for their barrier islands in Lee County is 96 hours.
That's four days. Okay.
As opposed to the legally required 16 hours. So you can kind of see why more people in Lee County died from Hurricane Ian than any other county.
Yeah. 72, that's a lot. You know, I mean, that is a lot of people to die. And again, we're not talking about Miami or Pinellas County. You know, Lee County is big, but it's not that big. And I want to back that up a second, because you talk about this state mandated evacuation time. Where I live, Amelia Island, Fernandina Beach, like Captiva and also Sanibel, that's, you know, Sanibel and Captiva are right there next to each other.
Right.
There's one road on and one road off.
Yeah.
So when people here in Nassau County and on Amelia Island talk about development and overdevelopment and high rises and more density and more this and more that, we always bring up what happens when you have to get all these people, all these extra people off an island, and there's one road to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the way they,
county commission never thinks about that.
No, they're gambling. Basically, they're gambling with everybody's lives and saying, we can do this for now, and there won't be a disaster until after we've left office.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously they lost that bet. But the thing they do to get around it is, and I addressed this in an earlier column, the way they do to get around this is they can mitigate it. And the way that you mitigate the extra evacuation time is you pay for additional storm shelters on the mainland. Well, OK, great. But that doesn't help getting people off the island, does
it? Right.
It just gives them a place to go. So it's a crazy system, and it's basically set up to fail and to cause the kind of tragedy that we had with the hurricane.
Yeah. Well, the silver lining is that enough attention of this was raised, the outcry from the public. And again, I will say this, and I've experienced it firsthand, and Craig, you've mentioned it in your column a number of times. Overwhelming community activism in person at city council, county commission meetings is the only way to stop these development projects. And there was a huge turnout to this, and the measure essentially got kicked down the road. So where do we go from here?
Well, it'll come back up in September. And the folks who were opposed to it are really hoping that they can work on the developer between now and then to tell them, hey, back down, man. This is a crazy idea and we don't support it. and you're going to make things worse for everybody here. So we'll see what happens. You know, one commissioner has already said he's opposed to it. We'll see if any of the others will line up on that side too.
Yeah, you know, and isn't that amazing? Just one.
Yeah, and he's the one that represents that area. So
naturally,
the one who's more attuned to what's going on.
Yeah, but again, if you think your public officials are representing you, they're not. They're representing the developer, and that is certainly not an isolated incident in Captiva. That is Florida, pan-Florida. FloridaPhoenix.com, another great article from Craig, and one of these little, you say little, you know, it means everything in the world to the people who live in Captiva. It's not, you know, getting a lot of attention across the state, and, you know, certainly with a governor running for president, it's not national news, but these are the important local stories across Florida that Craig continues to highlight in the column. And speaking of hurricanes and all the people there and Captiva and Sanibel and on Fernandina Beach, where I live, coastal homeowners, you can never be too prepared for hurricane season. And our longtime supporters with Windstorm Products, a local Florida company, they've got the largest online selection of hurricane hardware in the world. Prepare your home for hurricane season and shop windstormproducts.com for your hurricane hardware and shutter installation tools. And that takes us to this week's guest, who is the state director of the AARP. That is Jeff Johnson. And Craig, boy, if there's anything Florida's associated with, it's alligators and old folks, right?
Oh, that's true. That's true. It's the joke. We're home of we're the destination of the newlywed and nearly dead. So,
well, you know, obviously, retirees play a huge role in Florida. Our population, the
politics,
the politics, yeah. Absolutely, the economy, the whole thing. If this topic and this episode interests you, we've got, you know, one of my favorite episodes, and I think, you know, Craig, I can speak for you as well. The Villages episode, which was one of the first 20. I mean, it was early. I distinctly remember listening to that episode with my jaw open. I was like,
it was incredible.
Oh, yeah. My God. So the Villages episode, the Miami land boom episode, the land giant communities. That was a great episode that we don't talk about enough, about how Florida, you know, got chopped up by developers and became such a haven for retirees and all the shady practices that the developers were using to recruit folks from the Midwest and the Northeast to come here and retire the swindlers and the shuck and jive men. So in the archives, there are a lot of episodes related to this topic, but we're going to talk to Jeff Johnson today about the work the AARP does in Florida and the great history, the tremendous history of retirees coming to Florida.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today. How many, we know that roughly 900 to 1,000 new people move to Florida every day. How many of those folks are retirees, or do you have a number for that?
Craig, that's a really good question. It's something we've been trying to talk with demographers to find out about. Generally speaking, our assumption is that about half of them are going to be 50 and over. So not all of those retired. Obviously, a lot of folks in their 50s, 60s, 70s still working. But the lion's share of them probably retired. We don't really know for sure this current wave, this post-pandemic rush of folks from other places. But if it's anything like what we've seen in the history of Florida, it'll be about half of them.
Wow. And where are they coming from?
Well, yeah, so that's been interesting. You see them from the Northeast, of course. New York has sent a lot of folks our way. Historically, here in the Tampa Bay area where you and I are, you expect folks from the Midwest, and you do see some of that. It does seem like the post-pandemic push has been primarily from states that were a little more aggressive in locking down beforehand. So we actually have seen some influx from California, even though that's a long way away. Illinois to an extent, but you tend to still see a lot of New York, Massachusetts license plates driving around here. And don't forget the Canadians too, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Does the state make any effort to recruit these folks the way it does with its tourism board? Is there a retirement board working to advertise to potential retirees?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chad. So no is the short answer. Way back in Governor Bush's era, there was a committee put together to try to bring more retirees to Florida. But generally, that's been left to folks like developers and some cities. Actually, Tallahassee folks who are Floridians generally think of Tallahassee as maybe the one place nobody thinks about retiring to. And Tallahasseans realized, well, probably about a decade ago, they really started an effort to try to, there's a lot to do in Tallahassee for retirees, that the universities there make it a place where there continues to be a high level of learning, even though it's a smaller market than, say, in Orlando or Tampa Bay or Miami. Other than that, though, I think, and I think this is consistent with Florida's history, we have relied on the housing developers to do the recruiting for us. And there are certainly ads for, whether it's the Villages or Del Webb or lots of retirement-focused communities. Plastered
on top of the world.
Yeah, on top of the world. Another good example, Sun City Center. We could play this game all day long. They're all advertising in markets where they think they can lure some folks in.
Hmm. What are people looking for when they come here? I mean, what is it attracts them other than I'm assuming they're happy about the, you know, the no state income tax, which has been in place since the 20s. Yeah.
Craig, you know, it's a good question because it used to be the case that Florida was inexpensive compared to where folks were coming from. And that is less true now. The taxes certainly are a benefit that people will say. Honestly, whenever I ask groups, and oddly, this is true of folks coming from the north as well as from the south, lots of folks coming from Latin America, they all point to the weather, which, you know, I understand. And I think for anybody who has spent some time shoveling snow, there's remains an attraction here. I think there's also you and this podcast, frankly, hit on this. There is some uniqueness to the Florida culture that invites adventure, I guess, to put it in a positive light, that attracts people think that this is the place to get away.
That's one way to put it.
And I think, you know, and I think that ever since probably World War II, people have seen the sunny beaches here and the warm weather and the theme parks and the lifestyle is one that just sounds like it's attractive to relax to. And now we have multiple generations where, you know, my parents moved down here, my uncle moved down here, my grandfather moved down here. And so it's somewhat in the water. There was a time, I got to tell you guys, there was a time where we thought the baby boom generation would not follow previous generations in retiring to Florida. We had enough survey data that seemed to indicate that people were really preparing to retire in their community and not leave their home that they've, you know, lived most of their life in. But the trends clearly show that that's not the case, that there is a lure to Florida that has not been lost as we shift from one generation to the next.
An interesting development to follow if that weather attraction starts to move in the other direction with climate change, with excessive heat, with more regular flooding, with stronger hurricanes. Obviously, it's not anything that has manifested itself yet, but 5-10 years from now, it'll be curious to see if that starts to give people pause and they're like, Florida, well, maybe Georgia or Tennessee, but not Florida.
You guys may remember this, but what was it, 15 years ago, maybe more so now, when we had the slew of hurricanes in the span of a couple of years.
2004, 2005, yeah.
And we saw the property insurance rates spike after that, and availability for property insurance got really hard. You saw this trend that we called halfbacks. So there are people who came from the Northeast or Midwest who moved back to like Tennessee because they also don't have a state income tax, or North Carolina. For that premise, the idea was, well, you know, we like the weather, but maybe not that weather. So so whether we see that again is a fair question. It will be really interesting to see over the next couple of decades. Yeah. Well, how climate change might affect.
Right. My grandparents on my dad's side retired to Florida. My grandparents on my mom's side retired to Texas. This is from Wisconsin. That's where I'm from. Looking at Texas and every single year, the heat wave, the just outrageous heat, dangerous heat, power grid failure. Then you talk about the storms in Houston, the hurricanes, the ice storms in Dallas. Again, dangerous people dying of heat, dying of lack of electricity in the wintertime. I, again, it would give me incredible pause if I was in Wisconsin or Ohio, Indiana, all those places where people retire from, and looking at Texas and being like, man, that, you know, great. Again, no state income tax. It has its advantages, but between that and the scarcity of water, and it's, you know, that seems like temperatures and weather off the other end of the scale where it would be a disincentive.
You know, you betcha. And Chad, generally speaking, historically, the folks to the west of the Mississippi would tend to go to places like Arizona, mm-hmm. Nevada, maybe Southern California, if they could afford it. And a lot of the same trends there too, right? I mean, when you look at, I think the Rays were playing in Arizona recently, and I was looking at a nighttime temperature of 102 out there.
Yikes. And
yeah, exactly. So you can see where the calculus may change a little bit. I think there's also one of the things that's been kind of interesting. Well, I mentioned that the baby boom generation has retired to Florida much like their parents did. It's been a little bit different in that there continue to be very strong interest in those traditional 55 plus communities, of which mm-hmm. the villages are the stereotype. But as you and I, you know, as we were talking earlier, mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch of examples. But what we've also seen is that the resurgence of Florida cities have often been driven not only by the millennials and Gen Zers who are moving into apartments downtown, but by baby boomers and retirees, sometimes local, you know, like sometimes mm-hmm. there are people who lived in a single family house who would rather live in a condo on Beach Drive in St. Petersburg or, you know, Bayshore in Tampa or wherever. Yeah. But oftentimes by people who don't really have an interest in living with just other older people, but want to live intergenerationally in a place that's got a really interesting culture. And Florida has a number of good examples for that.
Well, yeah, I think, Craig, down by where you are, St. Petersburg is maybe the poster child for that. You know, a community yeah. that was once God's waiting room has yeah. really become attractive to older folks for the vibrancy of the arts and culture scene, the dining yeah. scene, but also continuing education, you know, with yeah. USF Tampa. You know, there is without question that retiree who wants to sit around in Bermuda shorts and black socks and flip-flops and play golf and water their lawn all day. And then, you know, there's a younger, and people are, many cases, being able to retire at a younger age in their late 50s, mid-50s, early 50s. And that is far too soon to just, you know, play the waiting game with the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, yeah. When people move to Florida, when retirees move to Florida, what's the one thing you wish every single one of them knew that they don't know?
I wish they knew that they needed to be prepared to become Floridians. I mean, you guys, and by which I mean this. So we know the folks who came from somewhere else, and when you ask them where they're from, they continue to say, I'm from Cincinnati, I'm from Buffalo, I'm from Boston, wherever the case may be. And I'm not saying this to knock those communities. I'm sure they're great. But the reality is, in order to age successfully, in order to do well, you need to engage in the community that you're in, because the friends that you make here or the friends you don't make here because you don't think of it as your home will end up being really determinative of your health, of your ability to survive disasters we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. All sorts of things depend on that social integration and social capital. And of course, our communities need their volunteer energy, their entrepreneurial energy, all of those things too. But even if you're just thinking of it selfishly, when the storm comes through, it's your neighbor who's going to check on you and see if you weathered it or not. It's not somebody back in Minnesota or mm-hmm. you know, or Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Do folks turn to AARP for help with that? I mean, do they say, I've moved to Florida, I don't know anybody, what do I do?
It's funny. We are perceived by a lot of folks as a big national organization, and let's face it, we are. But because we do have local offices, we have a state office in Florida, and groups of volunteers and staff across the state, we do get that. We've done things like free movie screenings or lectures or a night at the museum or a night at the ballpark. And what we find is people will show up because they think, huh, well, AARP is going to be inviting people who are kind of like me, or people mm-hmm. who came from somewhere else, maybe, or people who are from here, maybe, but people who are about the same age. And, you know, generally, it's not a dating scene and it's not a business networking scene. It's a making friends scene. And we have seen that happen. So it's kind of one of those beautiful things that when people start getting peppered by mail from us when they turn 50, they don't necessarily think about, but ends up being kind of useful.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of respects, for retired people, coming to Florida is like going to college again. You know, you don't know anyone. You're going to a different place. You know, how do I fit in here? Where do I find my people? And, you know, AARP helps with that. And certainly those 55 plus communities help with that. Obviously, that is the attraction there. You are surrounded by like-aged and like-minded and generally like socioeconomically backgrounded people. And that's very attractive for a lot of folks. And one of the things that I think makes Florida such a haven for retirees is that it has been such a haven for retirees. You know, there is a lot of volunteer infrastructure, like you talked about. And my mom's in her 70s and has never been more busy in her life with beach turtle patrol and horseshoe crab patrol on Amelia Island. There are so many volunteer opportunities for retired people that she has a robust a more robust social calendar than she ever did back in Wisconsin.
Right. No, you're right. And I'm chuckling because there tend to be two paths to retirement. And it's true in Florida. It's probably true other places too. One is what your mom is going through, which is you start to think, maybe I need to go get a job so I can take a break because I've got so many activities going on. The other path is you sit and don't do anything for 6 months, and then your significant other says, no, you got to get out of the house. I did not sign up for this much time, quality time. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of get pushed out there. But I agree. There are lots of things to do. And the other thing that I hear from people who came from kind of more traditional older communities, I mean, like historically older communities, there are places where if you're not like fourth or fifth generation from that community, nobody cares about you. Nobody wants to get divorced. You can't get involved. Whereas here, you hit the ground running and you can be, it doesn't matter where you're from. If you've got energy and ideas and interest, then there are opportunities for you.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's I'm recording this in Chicago right now from just outside of Milwaukee, Cleveland. I was just in Buffalo, those sort of places. I was just in St. Louis, where the first question you get from anyone in town is what high school you went to. And they mean in St. Louis. But, you know, again, in Florida, where I live, Amelia Island, Fernandina Beach, if you've lived there 10 years, you've like got generational wisdom. Of the place, which, you know, is absurd in the scale of any other place in America, aside from Las Vegas, maybe.
Yeah, you're right. And you hit on, again, like there are some places in Arizona that sort of have that. The Las Vegas area has actually gone through a fair bit of that. But that's Florida through and through. And it's kind of remarkable because, like, where you are, there's some really fascinating history around.
Oh, for sure.
American Beach and all of that. Mm-hmm. That kind of gets lost when everybody is, you know, moving into the plantation from someplace else and just doesn't know that. So there are trade-offs. The positive is, again, you can engage right away. You don't have to feel like you have to sit on the sideline until your grandkids have tenure here. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the trade-off is you may not necessarily be aware of all the history that is in the place that you've moved to.
Well, it's interesting that yesterday I was in an Uber and my driver was a retiree from New Jersey. He worked in the financial industry in Manhattan, lived in New Jersey, moved to Florida. And I said, when did you start driving for Uber? He said, about a year ago, because I was bored.
Yeah.
He moved to Florida and got bored. And I'm thinking, how can you possibly get bored in Florida?
Craig, and you make a great point there. And I'm not going to say this is like one of the saddest things I've ever come across in a world that still has modern day lynching and, you know, human trafficking. But people who are bored in retirement sadden me deeply, because retirement, you know, should be a time where you can purely explore all of your interests on your own time. And the people who are bored in retirement have no interests. So imagine a life with no interests. Yeah, I mean, getting kind of philosophical here, but that is a classic example of something I come across every once in a while. You know, someone will say, I'm retired, I just don't know what to do with myself. I'm like, oh, that's so sad. You know, to read, bird watching, you know, do something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a list. There's a lot to do in Florida. You guys are pretty clear on that. And I also think that, and by the way, like, I think all of the ride shares in Florida depend on bored retirees in order to run, because I haven't been in a Lyft or an Uber in a really long time that in Florida that hasn't been driven by somebody who retired from somewhere else. But the point that you hit on, kind of that sadness, the one that gets me, and there was just recently another slew of stories about that, or the they've called them different things, but they're basically the neighborhood casinos, the internet cafes, the whatever you want to call them, whatever they have, that become de facto senior centers where somebody lives at the Mainlands, let's say, or, you know, some development. And there's one of these in a strip mall nearby next to the laundromat and the convenience store. And they'll go spend every day there, and they won't spend a lot of money. Usually they're not being, you know, they're not necessarily about compulsive gambling,
killing time,
life savings. They're just looking to kill time, and that becomes their community. And while I guess at some level, I'm glad that there is a community, there are so many more opportunities that can be a net positive for them and for society if they looked a little broader than just what's across the street from their development.
Well, and the more you think about it, you know, as people live older and older, and there was a time 80 was, wow, you lived to 80. Bravo. And then, 80, now 90 is sort of like, if you've had some privilege in a middle-class life and didn't abuse your body in one way, shape, or form, or had to perform a particularly laborious, job in your career, 90 is sort of the goal. So, there's a good third of your life that you're going to be retired.
Right.
That's a long time to just play out the string, brother. Like you say, for these people who can't find, that it's not even the closing chapter anymore. It's the third verse. Right. It's great that AARP and there are resources for people to be vibrant and have purpose and take enjoyment out of again, these golden years that, you work your entire life, supposedly for retirement, and then people get there and they're like, what do I do?
And there are people who they loved what they did in work and they just continue to do it. So my dad, before my parents passed away, my dad was a dentist. Great gig, I guess, for those who like to put their hands in people's mouths. And he did it till he was 84. And then when he retired, he and my mom would drive Meals on Wheels to the old people until they're in their early 90s. And, the old people were probably like 20, 30 years younger than them in some cases. The opportunity to continue to contribute is really there. And it's something that I agree. I wish we could find more ways to help people recognize that those opportunities are there. Even if you loved your job and are no longer able to do that, there are other things that you can do that that can make you feel good about how you spent your day.
Yeah. The interesting thing to me, I went to the Villages to do a book talk at one of their 80, they have 80 book clubs at the Villages.
Yeah.
And afterwards I was having lunch with some of the folks who had invited me, and they were telling me that, in their 70s, they still think of themselves when they're not looking in the mirror, they think of themselves as being in their 40s.
Yeah.
And, they're active in sports and stuff like that. And they pointed at a woman in another nearby table, and they said, "You see her? She's in her 90s. She's old."
Right. Exactly. I think it, when you talk to kids can really depress you because they'll say 30 is old when they're like 8 or 9. But I think that mentality sticks around where we always just assume that old is a good 15, 20 years down the road from where I am right now. And I think that because we are living healthier lives, Greg, to your point, there are a lot of people in their 70s and some even older than that who don't yet think of themselves as old and good. I might as well. I think that you guys were both talking about how 90 is now kind of a relatively normal benchmark. And there's no reason to believe that it won't continue to move up as we continue to learn better how to take care of our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. My mom is 89. Wow. She volunteers at the library. She goes to yoga 3 times a week. She's in better shape than I am.
Oh man, there's nothing like I swam in high school and then took like a quarter century off and started swimming again. And there's nothing like getting beat by an 88-year-old to, help you kind of put things in perspective.
have retirement trends in Florida, retirees coming to Florida, largely been linear and steady, or have there been boom periods?
I'd say, good question. And I would say in general, there's certainly been ebbs and flows. And, we talked about the hurricane piece and the economic piece. When in the recession, you would see fewer people come here. Obviously those kind of macro level things. I think if anything, it has been a little bit of not just like when you smooth out those bumps, if you will, more less linear and more exponential. Because again, there was, you go back to the folks who were, let's say, Depression era, who largely you saw going to places like in South Florida, the condo commandos we talked about back in the 2000 election. And then you saw the other 55 plus communities come up. And now you see that there are so many more people who are not necessarily even looking at those traditional retirement places. You go to a place like Hardy County, kind of middle of the state, you know, very rural. And you'll find that there are people who have chosen that to retire because they wanted to get away from all of the big things. And so that proliferation of awareness of opportunities to retire in different settings has allowed people to better kind of customize where they go. And I mean, again, this is y'all's bread and butter, but like Florida is an endlessly interesting place with all the options that you could imagine.
What are questions that people come to AARP with that, you know, they're like, help me with this?
One of the things, and I should say that AARP has, because we do start at 50, allowing people to join as full members, we have long since abandoned the words that were the acronym American Association of Retired Persons. What we often get are a couple of things. One is the what we've been talking about. How do we get involved? What do I do with this next chapter of my life? You know, that sort of thing. The other thing, honestly, that hits not only those who have retired, but those who have not yet retired, is how do I take care of so-and-so who may be a spouse, but maybe an aging parent or aunt or uncle. And sometimes you even see it with, we're seeing more of people who want to retire but have adult children who have needs or disabilities that they've been a lifetime caregiver for. And that caregiving thing is a challenge. I mean, I think any of us who have been through that can testify to that. And it's something that when we all, for those who had kids, when you were having a kid, there's books, there's classes, everybody sees it, everybody celebrates it. You know, there's sort of a path that you can follow. When your parent is aging, there's a whole lot less of that. Those things exist to greater and lesser degrees, but it's generally invisible. The number of people that I've talked to who in all walks of life, from, you know, people working the front desk at a hotel or driving an Uber to people running major organizations, where it's probably in the, you know, 15th or 20th question that it comes out that they're also trying to figure out how to take care of mom who's living with them or in an apartment, nearby, that sort of thing. It continues to surprise me because it is significantly taxing. It can be very difficult to manage from just kind of figuring out the systems and what we do. And everybody feels like they're doing it on their own. And that's something that we hear probably as much as the, you know, what do I do with this next chapter, or how do I manage money, or how do I navigate the healthcare system?
Well, and that's, this aging population, the upside is people are living longer, healthier. Yeah. They've got more opportunities to have experiences and make the most of that time. The other side of that is you can be 60 and now you've got a live-in parent, not kids. And, you know, so increasingly you've got, an 80 plus 90 year old in the house who may need, round the clock care.
Need a lot of care. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that and with the changing nature of family structure in a lot of the U.S., it used to be, the oldest daughter was like the default of who ended up doing it. Now, a lot of times you only got one. And so, there's no oldest. There's just the child who ends up balancing a lot of that, which can be a real challenge.
Yeah. What are the roots of AARP, as the organization? How did this thing evolve and come to be such a, a prominent brand in American life?
No, thanks for asking, because there's actually a little Florida St. Pete specific mystery that I've never found anybody who can fully explain that connects to the very beginning days of AARP. So there's a bit of a story. So there was a woman out in California, Ethel Percy Andrus, who was a school principal, and this was back in an era where women were generally not given the ability to lead. She was a high school principal in LA, And she retired to take care of her mom. And so her mom actually got better, which is often not the story line. And she had time to give. And so she started volunteering for her local retired teachers group. And along the way, she ended up on the welfare committee, which meant they would go check on retired teachers, see how they're doing. So she checked on one day, went to the house, knocked on the door, said, "Hey, I'm here to see so-and-so." And they said, "We don't have anybody here by that name. I don't know who you're talking about, unless you mean the woman who lives out back." And she went out back. And the retired teachers live in a converted chicken coop because that was all she could afford. She, you know, they didn't pay into Social Security. It was pre-Medicare. Healthcare costs were really high. And so she was living in this little shack in the backyard. And this infuriated Dr. Andrus so much that she said, "We got to do something about it." She worked with her local retired teachers. They're not powerful enough to change the system. Worked with the state, not powerful enough. So she formed the National Retired Teachers Association, and they worked as advocates in the state and federal government. They worked on community service projects to keep people engaged and connected. And they worked in the marketplace to negotiate insurance because nobody wanted to write health insurance for retirees at that point, again, pre-Medicare. So that was 1947. 11 years later, 1958, she had heard from so many people who said, "I want to join NRTA. By the way, I have no affiliation with the school system, never been a teacher in my life," that she decided she needed to form another organization. The American Association of Retired Persons was formed to do those same three things: advocate in the legislature and in government, advocate in the marketplace, and connect people for community service. And when that organization was founded in 58, again, she was from California. The main office was in D.C. because of the advocacy piece. There was a presence in St. Petersburg. There was a hospitality house that was across from, I think, the old bus station, which is on Central Avenue in downtown St. Pete, that the first magazine, and AARP still has, I think, the whitest red magazine in the world. The first two issues talked about coming to the AARP hospitality house in lovely St. Petersburg, which then was the land of green benches. And you go on tours and you can stay here and you can meet other AARP members. And then we got into lifelong learning. So before colleges did the lifelong learning program, we had lifelong learning programs, one of which was based here. Before the free market discovered that you can make a lot of money on mail order pharmacy, we had a volunteer run mail order pharmacy that ran out of that same hospitality house. When Dwight Eisenhower held the first White House conference on aging in like 1961, the prep work and the initial field hearings were done at the Coliseum in downtown St. Petersburg. And I've never found anybody who can tell me why Dr. Andrus liked St. Pete, other than the green benches possibility, I guess. But it has always been kind of like the secret innovation center of AARP. And that's it's a fascinating story to me that's maybe someday I'll figure out the details on.
Maybe she's a big spring training fan.
Maybe so. Maybe Yankees fan, or I don't know.
What's the most unusual request you've had to deal with?
That I can talk about on a public podcast.
We're not regulated by the FCC, right. So you have a little bit of leeway.
That's good to know. But you know, the thing that I think is kind of, I guess it's unusual. We have, from time to time, have organizations say, "Hey, we're turning 50. Can you give us an AARP membership, an AARP card?" So like USF St. Pete turned 50, or when down in Sarasota, the Senior Friendship Center turned 50, you know, we got a big AARP card and presented it to them and said, you know, "We'll send you all the magazines you want, and feel free to try to use it for a discount at the movie theaters." We'll get that. But honestly, I think that there is, because AARP works in so many different arenas, that we get all kinds of stuff. I mean, we get everything from, "Hey, have you guys ever done a dating service?" to people who assume that we are government entities. I think one of the things that we'll get sometimes is questions about, like, "How did you find me? How did you know I was 50? Sometimes we're wrong, by the way. Every now and then I hear from like a 25-year-old, they're like, "Why am I getting an AARP mail?" Probably a fake ID somewhere, and it's coming back to haunt you. But back during the war on terror, the story was that Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld said that their plan to get bin Laden then was to wait till he turns 50 and just follow AARP.
Jeff Johnson, State Director AARP in Florida, thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity, guys. Really appreciate it.
This has been great. Thanks, Jeff.
Craig, what are you looking forward to in retirement?
I'm wondering if I'm ever going to reach retirement.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I had a plumber in my house this week who was like, "Hey, congrats on your retirement." I'm like, "Dude, I'm working harder now than I've ever worked before."
Yeah. Just because I don't have that job anymore, you remember me from, that doesn't mean I'm retired.
Yeah. I'm working from home. I'm working, but I'm working. You know. Yeah. But
well, but I think when you've got a job you love, and you obviously love to write, you love to report, you love meeting people, you love
I like asking nosy questions,
right? And thinking and talking about Florida and having your voice heard and sharing stories. I'm very similar. I don't intend to work particularly hard my whole life, but I hope, you know, what I do as a freelance writer, as a podcaster, you know, I hope there is not a gold watch ceremony for that. I hope that's something that I can do well into my 60s and 70s. Fortunately, we both have jobs that are not physically taxing. So, you know, there is not the sort of sunset on this as if 50 years ago we were working in a sawmill or, you know, mining coal or, you know, farming or something like that. That's very arduous.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is, and I wish I had thought to ask Jeff about this, but the days of working at one job your entire career are pretty much gone. People bounce around now, and you know, it's so you've had a whole variety of experiences. You've worked at different companies, you know, and now you can kind of set your own path. You know, please, folks, if you're retiring to Florida, get out there and see what Florida has to offer you.
Yeah. If you're lost, I think the public library is a great resource. You go to the public library, there will be all kinds of sign up volunteering opportunities posted on the cork boards or, you know, your community center. There's going to be a play, you know, whether it's a community swimming pool or meeting center, you know, those are places where people who need volunteers, or like you said, the book clubs and groups there are.
Yeah.
If you are feeling isolated, sure, reach out to the AARP, but I would suggest just go to your library, go to your local community center, the local coffee shop. You know, those are places that are going to have all kinds of people who are putting up, hey, we've got this group or that group and continuing education, or we're taking a little trip here. You know, I know the I'll throw a plug in for my Florida Native Plant Society. They are constantly doing trips that are free or, you know, nominally priced all across the state. You know, figure out what you're passionate about, what you're interested in. And because there are so many of these retirees like you in Florida, you can be sure that there are groups and organizations designed to help you sort of mainline into that community.
Absolutely. Welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.